Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to episode 216, my chat with podcaster, activist, and arts educator, Carib Mars. But first, a bit about our sponsor. This episode of Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. You can get your free audiobook download and your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. In my conversation with Carib, we talk about healing trauma with art. So I looked that up here on Audible, and I found Healing Child and Family Trauma Through Expressive and Play Therapies. Seems like this book would be a good companion text to Carib's podcast, Age Out, Rise Up. Audible is available for your iPhone, Android, or Kindle. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. In this episode, we talk to Carib Mars, the creator of Age Out, Rise Up, a podcast by and for survivors of childhood trauma, especially former foster children, who refuse to let their past define them. Listen in as we chat about giving children a voice and about making art as a way of processing pain. Support Carib Mars by subscribing to Age Out, Rise Up on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, and YouTube. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 216. Carib Mars wants to make kids feel like stars. Enjoy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah.
There's never been a time that I haven't been a storyteller and a performer. I loved Shirley Temple when I was little, and but it was the never ending story. When I saw the Empress at the end, that I was like, I want to be just like her. So that's how, those are the first two things that I saw. And then what I actually performed, I remember like the little Christmas concerts that kids have. And I remember that this girl had the part. I have no idea why she had the part, probably because her, I don't know, nepotism or something like that. And I remember she couldn't say chimney. She said chimney. And I was so annoyed by the fact that she couldn't say it right. And I was like, I would be so much better. And then I just basically was in pretty much everything. So I've been acting.
So like during this Christmas concert, did you like walk out and like kick her off the stage and you're like, let me show you how it's done?
No, but I do think I gave her the evil eye quite a bit. I was just like, she didn't even say chimney right. And I definitely have this little bit of a competitive streak. Like I like to say that I would make a better duchess than the current duchess right now. but I've pretty much been in everything. So when I was little, I lived in a lot of foster homes, and all of the foster homes were religious, and so they would do like vacation Bible school. And I was always the first one up, and I always played the lead in all of those. And then I went to Christian school for my middle school, and I started a drama club there. And then I got to high school, and that was interesting because I was used to playing the lead, and I was, how do I say it without being arrogant, I was talented enough to play those parts, but my drama teacher said the town that I lived in was not ready for a person of color to play leads. So yeah. And so what happened there, I know it was, what happened there is there was an audition. I remember the play was The Bad Seed, and she cast her niece the 3 years that she was in school. Her niece played the lead, and finally she was just, and finally she was just like, she told her aunt, she was like, I'm not going to do this play because the truth is we all know that Carib should have this role. So she still didn't give it to me, but the whole class was just like, this role should go to Carib. She's the strongest actress here. And and she never really saw that. So her name was Miss Mack. I'm not going to say her full name, but
let's not. She's clearly racist, so let's not talk about her first name.
No. She was actually, she's just old school. I wouldn't call her.
Oh, bless your heart.
I just wouldn't. She treasured me, and she was a role model for me. But I did have to experience that. That was just what it was in the 90s. So it wasn't even that super, super long ago, but that's what it was still in the 90s.
Yeah.
And so she wrote my recommendation letter for Cornish, and I got in my junior year, and everybody thought that I was going to go and become famous. And I did go to Cornish, and because of my background, and my inability to handle things emotionally of being completely on my own, I did not do well in Cornish. I actually ended up trying to commit suicide. That's how I left the school.
Oh.
So, the next year I went to an acting conservatory in Seattle, and I finished their program, and it was a better fit for me anyways. And so that's that. That's how I got started, I guess. It's kind
what
of
was the what was black. The acting conservatory?
It was the Northwest Actors Studio. It no longer exists. The beautiful, amazing woman who ran it was Anne Graham. And she was just phenomenal. And I loved her. And she passed away. She was probably in her 80s. In the 90s.
Right. Yeah.
Or in the early 2000s. Yeah.
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 But when you went to the conservatory, you were able to fit in better and get more settled?
Yeah. So when I went to Cornish, it was a bunch of very wealthy kids.
Yeah.
Like HBO producers, kids and things like that. And here I am, a foster kid with literally nothing. Like the way that it worked out for me is, I turned 18. Well, I made it into Cornish my junior year of high school. So my senior year was a breeze. I was in the newspapers. It was a pretty big deal. And as soon as school got out, they drove me to Seattle. They gave me a coupon book of food stamps and paid for 1 month's rent and said, good luck. And that was it. And I had no one and nothing. And that's a lot for a kid to take on.
Yeah.
You know, like going off on your own is a lot. But going off on your own and having no one, no family, no therapist, which would have been amazing, you know, nothing to rely on was a really hard, hard experience. And then I got there, and I'm from this tiny town. It's called Moses Lake. It is tiny. And, you know, and I get there and the culture is just so incredibly different. And I was religious at the time. And I remember my teacher, her name was Dana. I cannot remember her last name, but I remember her the first day. She was like, I'm going to teach you all to fuck yourself. That means I want you to say fuck in every situation, every way. And I was just like, I was so innocent. I was like, I can't remember. Well, I think it was New Kids on the Block, but it might have been some other boys band. But I wrote, I love JC in my shoes. And I meant, I love Jesus Christ. I mean, I was beyond super innocent. And I get into class and that's what it's like. And I'm just like, I have no idea where I am. I am not in Kansas anymore. And then like the kids could be cruel like always. Right. And they threw a party, a drama party. And I was the only person not invited.
Oh.
But it was okay. I mean, It wasn't okay because I thought it was going to be, I'm using all of these old people words, but I thought it was going to be like Fame. I thought that I was going to come to the school and we were going to run down the streets singing musicals, dancing in the streets, jumping on top of cars. And, you know, that's what I expected. It was going to be my family, and it just wasn't. So,
was the acting conservatory better? I mean, I believe in Fame, it was a, wasn't Fame a high school acting conservatory?
Yes.
So, I mean.
The thing about the acting studio is that there were, in my class, I think there were 9 people. 7 of them were male. One of them was a girl who, I remember them saying, say something about yourself. And she said, well, men want me and women want to be me. And so I fit the other role. So she fit those roles and I fit everything else. So it was fantastic. I had a place.
Sure. Sure. Somebody's got to play the nurse in Romeo and Juliet. Yeah, I get it.
Yes.
I mean.
Yeah, and it wasn't even the nurse in Romeo and Juliet. It was the nice girl.
Yeah.
I played everybody who was nice. I played smart women, you know.
That's nice.
So I got to play, and I played a lot of ingenues. I just didn't play the extremely conceited. I wasn't that person.
Yeah, so. Wow. What's crazy, well, you know, don't out her with her name or anything, but is she currently famous?
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I got a few of those in my past, too. You know, I got a few people that I worked with along the way who would really just put you down and act like they were better than you. And it's like, yeah, I've never seen you again. Like, come
on. I remember I directed when I was in Utah. I started a Shakespeare in the Park group. And I remember, I mean, these are people who've never acted a day in their lives. And they just want something new because they live in some tiny little town. And this person sent his resume to me via email. And he said, I've never done this a day in my life, but I have a really great body.
That's what they think they need.
I was like, okay.
Be like, go to LA, kiddo. Go to LA.
Like, well, he wasn't a kid. He was like in his 40s at the time.
Oh.
He wasn't a kid. And he definitely thought that he was all of that. And then he opened up his mouth to act. And I was like, oh. Well, you could play the servant who comes in and carries the bread. I was just like, and I addressed that immediately. Like everything that I've ever cast since then has been, I do completely colorblind casting. Yeah. I cast people who you would not look at and go, oh, they should play that role. So, because if they can carry it with the talent, or if they're going to be the ones who work the hardest, like when I do my son's elementary school plays, we just did Charlie in the Chocolate Factory. I have moms calling me. Yeah, they're calling me and they're just like, I know you have a lot going on, and I know it's 5 a.m., but my daughter has been taking singing lessons. And I'm like, okay, we'll see at auditions. I'm not going to be bribed, not going, you know, because I believe in theater. It's about its art. To me, it's about its art. It's about the fact that, you know, these kids have a chance to express themselves. And for me, like, why I'm passionate about it at his school is not everyone is going to be the champion on the sports field. So I want all of these kids to get an opportunity to shine. That's kind of my thing. And that was my thing in this small town, too. So I actually did make the guy with the good body, in his opinion, a better role than carrying the bread. But If I would have just went with my gut, I probably would have had him carry the bread. But I was like, I'll work with him. I'll teach him how to be more than the bread carrier and more than a body.
He clearly has the work ethic. You know what I mean? Like, if he's working out enough to be buff in his mid-40s, that's a lot of effort. You know, like, most of us in our 40s are not buff. I mean, I've never been buff, not one day. Mm-mm, not from 0 to 41 right now. Have I ever been buff? There wasn't a day. But there are some people, you know, who are. And then they get a little older, they're a little doughier. So that guy, I mean, you know, he clearly wanted to put the work in.
Yes, and he did. I will tell you, he put the work in, and he really, really tried, and he became significantly better than when he started. And that's kind of
thanks
the way
to
that
the
I
director,
look at it.
I bet.
It's a journey.
Yeah.
It's a journey, though, you know? It's like, and that's the way, even when it's the little kids, I cast every kid who auditions, which means there is a lot of kindergartners that I'm working with for 6 hours a week, you know, and teaching them like how to soft shoe. And it's adorable, and they are so, so cute. But yeah, I'm like, I'm not trying to raise stars here. I'm just trying to make the kids feel like stars in their own little hearts. That's my thing.
So I want to ask you, you mentioned that you started the Shakespeare in the Park in Utah. What got you to the point? So you went to the acting conservatory. What got the like directing bug in you? Sounds like you are an organizer. You know, you're like, you created this Shakespeare in the Park thing. Now you're working to organize your kids' play. You're an organizer. So like, how did you get to who
that.
Let
I
you did the Shakespeare in the Park?
Professional organizing, which is actually kind of hilarious. But
wait, like you're the person I call if I want my closet to look better?
What? Like Marie Kondo, except for like, I don't tell you to think your jewelry when you take it off. I love the concept, but I'm not going to do it. So
you're like Marie Kondo light. I like it.
Yeah.
That's one of the services you provide to the world. That's wonderful.
I really enjoy it. And that came from a place of utter and complete chaos for myself. Like, I know in my home, we have to be minimalist. And like now I've taken that to the next level of essentialist. So what's the most important things that we do? And to me, one of the most important things is art, because like I was telling you before, with growing up in the foster system, I didn't have a voice. So I thought it was important to have a voice. I thought it was important to have something that every person was good at, that was a great equalizer, and you didn't have to come from money to be able to do. Does it help? Sure. But you don't have to have it. And if you have enough talent, you can change your circumstances, not necessarily your financial circumstances, but the way that people see you. Like, you become more, for me, I became more than just the foster kid. So directing is something that in the places that I lived, including here, they didn't have something. They did not have a program for the kids. And my son came home, and he came home one day in third grade, and he goes, "Mom, I'm an air guitarist in the school concert." And I was like, "Really? You don't have a single speaking word?" Remember, this is the girl who's like chimney. Like, I expected
chimney.
My child to have a bigger. I expected him to have a bigger role, and he made that air guitarist. I mean, he was doing Jimi Hendrix, like spinning around on the floor as a third grader with an inflatable guitar.
Yes.
He rocked it, and then we get to a new school, and he comes to me and he goes, "Mom, I'd rather clean out the car than go to tonight's concert." And then I went to the concert and I was like, "Oh, okay. Yeah, I see why." It was just like, I try so hard to be that Pollyanna and to keep the smile. And I was just like, no. And so I went and I just walked up to the PTA or the CPO, as we call it, and was just like, "We need more, and I'm willing to do it." And that year it was a nice CPO president, and she said, "Okay, but you're on your own." And I literally was on my own. So it was me and 60 kids pulling off Peter Pan. and it's hilarious, and I'll never ever forget it. So,
what makes you willing to do that? Like, what makes you, what gives you the drive?
Because I want these kids to have a voice, because we're so divided. I think we're so divided as a country, and we're divided in culture, and we're divided economically. And some of the kids, like, why I really wanted to do it is because I live in one of the more affluent areas of our town. And there is this one trailer park that, you know, just happens to be part of our group. And there's nothing for those kids. And so I wanted to do it for them. And I said, I'll bring my car down and I will pick up your kids, bring them in. And it's taken 3 years for any of them to let me do it. And this year I was able to bring a girl in, and she gave me the biggest hug. And it's just given kids a voice. I had another child who, her mom came up to me and she goes, I don't know if you know my daughter's story, but we moved here from another state because she was abused by someone so badly that he'll spend the rest of his life in jail. And she didn't talk. And then she saw your play last year. And she was just like, Mom, I want to do this. And then she came out and she did the play and she got her role. And I'm not going to say anything for certain reasons, you know, but the tears streaming down her mom's face when that little girl sang, that's why I do it. So, and it's not because I'm like a saint. Like, it gives me joy to keep it going for these kids. But it's hard. It is really, really hard, because the parents who aren't part of it don't want it. And they are so against it. And they make it so difficult. When I decided to do Peter Pan, I had a woman come up. She didn't even come up to me. She sent me an email. And it was all, you know, how offensive it is that you're doing Peter Pan because of the natives. And I was like, I actually beat you on that. And I chose to make the natives, even though Disney has completely gutted their song from what makes the red man red to what makes the brave man brave. I've gutted it and I've made them Dr. Seuss characters. They've got nothing about them as Native American. And she was like, well, I think it's important to listen to minority voices. And I almost sent her a selfie back.
You cannot win.
Because I'm like, I'm the only person who looks like me out here. So I'm like,
listen to this voice.
Thing. I'm like, I kind of understand.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can't win. And it is very, very hard. And just, but it feels like a win every year, anyways. Like, you know, when the kids. Yeah.
I was going to say, you know, I feel like all making of all theater is kind of an uphill battle. Like, oh, I'm sure the guy, the 40-year-old handsome, the buff guy in Shakespeare was not exactly easy to deal with. And I'm sure that once you got that Shakespeare in the Park thing going, and like two people had read more than one Shakespeare play, they were like, you know, I really think we should do this one instead of the one you chose. So like,
competing for the role, because not, you know, they want to be the lead, right?
Yeah.
And just having to deal with people who, you know, or they think that because you've got the guts to make it happen that you're arrogant. And it's like, I'm confident, but I try very hard not to be arrogant. Like, I don't know how to explain that. Like, I put work towards being gracious. That's almost my religion. And so I feel like, you know, I give a lot of people more than they deserve, or at least I try to, but it doesn't mean it's not hard. It doesn't mean that there's not time when you sit, at least in my shower, I have a seat in my shower and I cry. And I just am like, how is this so hard when I'm doing it for free? Not only for free, but like, I'm sneaking money out of my own family account to pay for this set, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, why then is this such a hard thing for people? Why are they so opposed to it? And for me, it's different because, like, I have friends who are so committed to making it. They want to be celebrities. And it doesn't matter that they've been working at this for 20 years, you know, and they haven't had their big break. It's what they want. They want, they want, and that drives them. I get joy just from the process. Hmm. I get joy from having kids go, I want to do that too. Or like before quarantine, my son's moving off into middle school next year. And one of the parents who has a daughter in middle school, and then her other daughter was Veruca, came to me and she goes, Carab, you've got to go to the middle school. They need you so badly. And then I walked over to the middle school and I saw their play and I was like, oh, this is grief, but it's watered down grief. Like, well, it was some random 50s musical, and the kids were they weren't having a good time. And so I got to come in there and like teach them the hand jive and like get them to be very, very happy. And these kids who, again, don't have voices, you know, one boy comes out to me and he goes, hey, can I tell you something? And I said, sure. And I've known these kids for 2 weeks because this is right before quarantine, right? And he felt comfortable enough. He does not know my stance on things. And he turns to me and he goes, well, I was back there. I found the most beautiful prom dress and I tried it on. And he goes, and I felt just like a princess. Hmm. And I'm like, that's why you do this. Because some people just need someone. They need a person. And maybe I'm driven to it because I didn't have a person, you know, but it's very important to me that every single person has one. So
that's so nice that you're there for those kids, that you're there to be someone to talk to.
And that sucks.
Yeah.
It really, really sucks because it's like I was only there for a couple of weeks when I was just starting to build those relationships. So it's not like I have their emails and could say, hey, want to hang out with this 40-year-old?
You know? Yeah, or like, do you want to do a little dance time like you're doing with your 4-H kids? So it's you mentioned you're teaching performing arts to the 4-H kids. Is that like a different, is that high school?
No. So they're, my youngest is 5 and my oldest is 16.
Okay.
And so it's about 9 kids and we get on Zoom and we just make whatever happen. So like last night it was a dance party and I asked the kids to record themselves dancing to anything that they wanted to dance to. And then I got on YouTube and I found different genres of dance to kind of expose them to different dances, and you could see that some of them were like, oh my gosh, square dancing, are you serious, what's wrong with you? And then I'd show them hip-hop and some of them would like lean in and others would be like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with you? You know? And then I showed them musical theater dancing, and so it's nice to be able to connect with them. I think a lot of people feel very threatened by this this new way of our new normal, right? And they're like, we can't do anything. That was my first thought, was how do you do performing arts when it's all about connection? Hmm. You know, theater especially, because that's really what I do. Like, they wanted to call it performing arts, and I'm like, okay, but I don't play an instrument, so I'm not going to be able to teach them how to do that. So I'm just exposing them to anything, and really I'm just connecting with them. I'm making the kids laugh. I wear like my hair in a funny way, or might wear a big flower on my head or something, you know, just something to connect with them and let them know that they're not being given up on because their program isn't the way it used to be.
Yeah. There's been a lot of interesting resources about like online teaching via Zoom, you know, and also like online performing. There's like,
yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you the number of discussion groups I've been roped into recently about performing online and whatnot. And, you know, it's an interesting new art. It's like we were all treading water and like, yeah, all right, I guess I'll continue to do this same thing we've all been doing. I mean, even Shakespeare, I mean, God bless him, but you know, he's been dead for a long time and we're still right. saying all his words. And I don't know how I'd feel about that. You know, who knows? Maybe he'd be like, what? No way. Like, we don't know. But we're continuing to do this over and over and like trying to find newness in it. Suddenly we have this new technique.
Shakespeare, though, he was about, building a legacy, right?
I don't know. So, I mean, I don't know if legitimately he actually cared. There's a lot of, I mean, you know what I mean? Okay. Like, he wrote a lot of stuff, and he got paid, and he was involved in the thing, but I don't know if he was thinking about the long term of it. You know what I mean? About a lot of people don't.
Yeah, well, actually, sometimes when you read his plays, and I love him, I very much enjoy his work, but sometimes they're the exact same play, right? Just different characters, but it's so very similar. And so maybe he was just, you know, writing whatever paid the bills. I don't know, but I'm sorry, you were asking
Saying is that, like, it's like a new medium. Like, we've been doing Shakespeare all the time, but now we have this Zoom teaching, and it's like a new medium. Yes. It's like a brand new thing that we get to try and learn and figure out.
And
you're
fail.
Right, people
and
are against
a
it.
Lot.
Yeah, of course you can. Failing is the best, though. Well, you know, controlled failing? Controlled failing? Yeah. I mean, regular failing is fine. It's not awesome all the time, but like controlled failing in like a class or something, that's awesome, you know, like that's legit, that's what you need in life.
Well, and I tell the kids, I'm like, I at the end of our meeting, I'm just like, okay, so thumbs up if you thought this was a good meeting, and it's okay if you didn't, because I'm still figuring it out, like, oh, that's how you share sound, okay. So, because I'm like, I don't know, and I think that's also super, super good for them. I think I probably should have been a teacher, but there's no way in hell I would be a teacher today.
No, not now. No. Yeah, the landscape for public school teaching is not great. It's not good.
No.
Mm-mm. It's like, I don't get me wrong, I'm still totally going to throw my child in public school and let him be devoured by the wolves and be like, oh, well, there you go. But I can't imagine what they put them through.
No.
Years ago, like when I was growing up, I'm from Boston, and my mom was like part of the Boston Teachers Union. For years, we held picket signs and discussed, you know, I was at events where they were discussing like new things for the teachers and like how to take care of them. And then years after she was a teacher, she became an advocate for teachers who would like go in and like argue, hey, you're not treating them right in the school itself.
Right.
And it's like down here in Texas, they're not really into unions, but it's that the idea of what I grew up with as a union was like, this is somebody who has your back in such a big way. They will make sure that you have a good experience. They will make sure that you're being appreciated. And so now when I see these teachers just being like ripped apart and told like, you got to do it for no money and no breaks and everything, it's like, also, I just found out, because my kid's not old enough to be in school yet, but I just found out that the school doesn't buy their supplies that they use with the students. And I was like, I'm sorry, that's like working at McDonald's and they're like, cool, did you bring the beef with you? Like, get out of here. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get it.
Oh, yeah. No. You have to buy your child's supplies. That's like every single year. Just plan on it being about $200 to drop. So,
but even things like the rug in the room and the like, alphabet on the wall. Like, are you kidding me right now?
Oh. Yeah, I know. I know they have to do it with their own.
With their own tiny amount of money that they give them. Get out of here.
So they get their union. We get union out here.
Good.
We're definitely, but it's not that. It's the fact that. I can't wrap my head around the fact that kids are not expected to be respectful anymore.
Yeah.
It's really hard for me. But I also feel like it also has to do with your connection with the kids. And I don't think it should, but it just does. So I know that the kid who said that would not have said it in my presence, because he knows that I just would not have been okay with it.
Yeah.
You know, but for some kids, I mean, they will walk up to their teachers and literally tell them to shut the F up to their teacher, and they don't get suspended.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting, that's why I couldn't be a teacher. It's like, I love the kids for 2 hours after school.
Yeah, that's true. I've done an after school program and I was a little like, wow, absolutely not. Like after I did that, I called the camp that I worked at. And I was like, just so we're clear, it's 11 and above. That's that's my rule. I'm not teaching anyone under 11. If you got single digits, see you later. Go to daycare. I'm not.
Right.
That's not my crowd. I'm actually usually better with 30 and above, but I'll take 11. You know.
Yeah. I do know. I know so well.
So talk to me about your newest project. There is a project that you are working on, your blog, and you just launched a YouTube channel. Tell us a little bit about this creative project and you know, how it's been going.
Sure. Okay. So I only launched on Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. So actually there'll be some good content by now. And it's called Age Out, Rise Up. And this is why I think that I can do my art as that side hobby and be completely content and actually find joy in it, because I find my purpose in what I'm doing with Age Out, Rise Up. So when a person ages out of foster care, that means they turn 18 and they are never adopted, and they do not return home. So 1 in 3 statistically in the United States become homeless. Only 3% of foster children go on to college. And that was my story. And so I have been fortunate enough to figure out a lot of things for myself. And I'm also a huge nerd, totally own it. That's why I said I don't know that I want my son to be quite the nerd that I am. but I read a lot of self-help and psychology books. And that is how I was able to escape a lot of things. You know, in my family's background, there's something called the ACEs, and that is a trauma scale, 0 to 10 of how much trauma you experienced as a child, the adverse childhood effects of trauma. And I'm a 9 on that scale. And according to the ACEs study, which is a medical study that was done, anything over 4, you are at risk for heart disease, depression, suicide, obesity, you name it, you know, bad things. And I heard this and I just thought, what a terrible label to give people, just to sort of say, oh, well, you had a sucky childhood, so your life is going to suck, the end.
Yeah.
And it doesn't completely say that, but that's how it felt to me hearing it. I was just like, that's beyond terrible. And so Age Out, Rise Up is about teaching the lessons that I've learned. So it's 3 parts. One is building community. So I do interviews with former fosters in all their stages. So sometimes you might be listening to an addict who is just talking about how sad they are and how they just want a little bit of hope, all the way up to people like I just did Ambition the Poet, and he's a relatively successful, up-and-coming, he's been on television, person who uses his time in foster care and uses his anger, but also brings a lot of hope in poetry. He used to be a rapper, but now he does it as poetry, to let people have a voice in a healthy and positive way. And so the whole gamut, and anyone who wants to be interviewed that's a former foster, I'm collecting their stories so that other people can listen to them and realize, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. There's a huge community of us. The other part of that is mentorship. And then I believe that the best people to help those who are coming out are the people who've already been through it. Because we know what others need. We don't just know what they want. It's not a handout. I don't believe in handouts. I believe in hands up. I believe in teaching a person to fish, basically. And then the other part is that will be getting stronger is I will be using my theater background to make more interesting film. Basically, like I'll take TED Talks and not film, just, you know, YouTube, whatever they are, YouTube videos.
You're still so filming.
TED Talk. Yeah. So far it's been a bit of a hot mess. I got a green screen. Well, actually my green screen didn't come in. And so I tried to use something that was green screen and my walls are blue. So it picked up on the blue walls and not the green screen. And there's just all sorts of, you know, I look like a giant in some of the videos, like standing in a kitchen that's too small. I've got some figuring of things out, but it's new.
Sure.
But I know that I'll be able to express these ideas in a way that's relevant to my people. Hmm. So,
do you have like creative, are you writing narratives and then like having people act them out? Is that what, cause you said film and then you backtracked on film.
Yeah. Okay.
Made me think like, are you writing scenes like drama, like sketches or drama scenes where people can like perform something and it like shows how to deal with something the right way or whatever?
So that is an idea. Right now in quarantine, it's just me.
Sure.
So I wrote a little piece, for Mother's Day and all it is I tell a portion of my story and I asked a few other people to tell the other side of Mother's Day, because for a lot of people, Mother's Day is not just flowers and I'm so lucky. Mm-hmm. You know, for some of us, like in my story, I talk about how when I was 8 or younger, I don't know, I was pretty young though. I was washing dishes and I wasn't washing them fast enough. My mother walked into the kitchen and just nonchalantly turned on a pot of water. And I'm sitting there washing the dishes and I didn't like to do the job because here I am, you know, probably seven years old. And I didn't do them fast enough. And so she walked over and she poured the boiling water over my hands. That's who I had for a mom. So, so I tell that story, but I also tell how it is, like, I don't just sit and wallow in that. And that is a big thing that a lot of people, not just foster people, but a lot of people sort of wallow in their victimhood. And what I do is I tell that story and then I say, you know, she told me you'll get used to it. But the fact is that I will never get used to being treated that badly. And because of that, it made me a person who wanted to seek out those who were hurting. And it made me also want to look for people and realize from very young age, way too young, 7, that's half the age of where your son is and where mine is, you know, and look at that and go, there's a way I don't want to be in life. And then there's the ways that I do want to be in life. And so that's what I do with HR, right? Sorry, that's a long-winded answer, but that's what I'm doing.
No, that's a good long-winded answer. That's nice. You said that you're probably going to, you mentioned I'm going to involve my theater in it and whatnot. I just wondered what you're hoping to create. Do you have different, you know, videos planned for things that you want to teach? Is it almost like you have a binder where it's like, these are all the lessons that I need to impart? Because like it only came out on Mother's Day, but I looked at the YouTube channel. There's a lot there already. So like,
well, those are mainly just interviews so I can double my interviews. But I have things like setting boundaries, anger, forgiveness, even minimalism, teaching people how to organize. But from that perspective, that it's easier to deal with your life. It's easier to deal with the things in your life when you don't have the clutter around, whether that's the mental clutter or the physical clutter. It's just easier to get a vision for your life. And these are people who don't start with a vision in the first place. So one of the things that I'd imagined how I wanted to launch was to get a couple of little girls who could have represented me growing up through the different stages until adulthood, you know, and then giving them like small parts of the scene. I actually hadn't thought about like how it could be comedic and using other actors, but I'm sure
it doesn't have to be comedic at all. I just figured like, well, you know, you could show any number of lessons.
And could be some scenes that would, you know, because the thing is that the subject matter is heavy, but it doesn't have to be presented in a heavy way. Like, so what I was saying about the Mother's Day thing, the way that wraps up is that I did what Mr. Rogers said to do. I looked for the heroes around me. And so it ends on this light note. And so I always want things to end on that light, you know, take the knowledge, put it in your head, tuck it away, and also walk away with some hope.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to do. And I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to do that. I think that the green screen is going to get tucked away until I practice for a while. And I think I'm just going to give some heartfelt, you know, what a lot of people do on YouTube. So I think I'll just start with that. And then I know that like for Father's Day, I want to honor men because I think that men in general are getting the short end because we're very, very all empowering of women right now. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that everybody should be empowered. But I don't want the pendulum to swing so far that my son feels ashamed of being a boy because people say, you know, white boys, which is what my son looks like, whether or not he is, is irrelevant, you know, are basically the devil. Like,
I hear you. My husband is white, and my husband and child are both white with red hair, so they actually are the devil. So it's very tough.
Oh yeah. Well, so is mine.
Oh no! Oh no!
Yeah, Liam's got freckles.
We got them all, dude. The redheads—they're the downfall of us all, man. Like.
Yeah.
It is hard though. No, all jokes aside, you're totally right. It's nice to make sure that, you know, everybody feels like they have a voice, even the people who, you know, you're right that a lot of times, you know, they're trying to give power to one group and people seem to think that if one group has power, that means that no other groups can. Or like if this group, if these people are allowed to be A, B, and C, then that means I can't. And you're like, no, not really. Like, I don't know where you thought that like you were getting stuff. You know what I mean? Like there's just a lot of, I don't know.
No,
I don't know. Privilege is a problem.
And,
but I try
very, very hard to be non-political because I want everyone to feel like they are welcome, you know? And
you know
so
what, though?
Really.
You know what, though? With relation to non-political, the millennials who are going to be the senators when our kids are our age are very political. Deeply political. So I don't think our kids are getting out of that. Like, I think it's getting way more political. I think, in fact, through our lives, like, because I'm in my 40s. I think I heard you say you were in your 40s. Like, we got a good chunk left, right? But I feel like it's not going to get too intense. Like to the... Oh, I mean, it's totally going to get very intense. But I just mean, like, that
I'm
when
like,
it,
I sort of feel like I'm close to living in the Hunger Games, but...
Sure, yes. Well, not yet. Almost. Close. We're getting there. Maybe today. I don't know. I haven't checked the news in an hour, so...
Swing back. Yeah. I don't know. I think the pendulum might swing back, and I think that our kids might actually rebel against it. And so it's interesting. That is something that I think as an artist we're gifted with is being able to step back and look at perspectives because, you know, what if you're handed a role of somebody who you absolutely can't stand their values? You got to figure out a reason to justify who they are, right? Like you have to. And so for me, I feel like that's what I mean by I will fight to preserve theater even when it's really, really, really hard, is because we're teaching kids to still feel and to see from other people's perspectives. And I think that a lot when politics get involved, people are only seen from their own perspective. Mm. That's how I feel personally. And, you know, it's not how everyone feels, but that's just what I see a lot of, you know, like people just saying, you know, yeah, you're free to feel whatever you want, but you're totally wrong.
Yeah.
Like, when did that not become rude? Like, I just remember when we were decent towards each other, you know? And I don't know. So I, for that reason.
You know what, though? I mean, you're very sweet to say, like, I just remember when we were decent to each other, because it was like, I know we've only been talking to each other for about an hour and a half or something, but I feel pretty confident that most of the stories you've told me have been not nice people. So the fact that you are so sweet and have such kindness and hope in you is you and probably God, but like but the world, it would seem, has not presented you too many, like, maybe a handful of people that where you could look at them and say, like, yeah, they're good. So I feel like it's in you. I feel like you have something in you that shines out, that is trying to, you know, that is going to be, make people feel comfortable and help them. And you're right that it has everything to do with the creativity, that it has everything to do with the empathy built out of being a creative person.
Purpose, right? I mean, it has to do with purpose, because yes, I could absolutely, and I have definitely sat and gone, are you freaking kidding me? One more really crappy person? Really? Really? But in a way, I actually had this kid, this lady who's a foster mom, or she's an adopted mom, and she called me and she said, I need you to talk to my daughter. I've never met her daughter before, and her daughter has some serious anger issues going on. And I was like, here's the thing. Sometimes you have to be selfish, and sometimes that selfishness is about your future. So do you want to be able to do these things? Do you want to be able to have this life? How do you want people to see you? Then you have to create that for yourself. And is it fair? Mm-mm. You know, she does not think it's fair that she is adopted at all. You know, she's very angry, and she's angry that she's in a transracial home and things like that. But it's like, I've had foster brothers and sisters who have just made a mess of things. I'm sorry. Like I said, I'm super blunt. And it's just like, I knew what I wanted to create, and it is hard, and it is not, I'm not just, oh, good morning, lovely birds. I love you so much. Princess, right?
But, I mean, you're a little, like, you're a little bit, there's definitely cartoon birds around you. I can tell right now. It's not like ourselves.
There actually is a bird that I'm staring at in a big tree in my front yard. Mm-hmm, but
it's sewing a dress for you, isn't it? What's happening? Okay.
But at the same time, I look at it and I go, this is how I feel about it. Like in a very big nutshell, because I've talked forever, is that anger is my birthright. You know, I was born into sexual abuse, physical abuse, extreme violence. My mother called me slave girl and made me call her your majesty. I mean, I was born into some extremely awful situations. I get to choose, though, whether or not I let that define me. Yeah. And I just won't, because I don't want to be miserable. And that makes me a little bit selfish, and I'm okay with that kind of selfish. So like I said before, I try really hard not to be arrogant, but at the same time, I recognize I'm kind of badass. You know, like, I recognize it, because I'm like, you know, it's a lot to deal with. And so, you know, I know that I deal with it the best I can, and I'm proud of the fact that I deal with it the best I can. And if that makes me a little bit arrogant, live with it. You know?
But if you're able to find a way to communicate with your videos and your, you know, your blog that you know, to help people who are angry, to like help yeah. them get through that. Cause we're all angry. Yeah. Even people like yeah, me who don't have anything to be angry about. We're all angry.
No.
I mean, no, I'm from Boston. It's in my blood. No, it's just, no, it was just bred into me. It's not, no, right. There's nothing wrong. No, I've gone over the details of my life. There's nothing real. It's just the Boston. It was just, they insert it into you when you get born there. You're like, they put it in your blood.
I used to have the biggest thing for boys from Boston, bald Irish boys from Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I married a Utah boy, but my thing was Irish boys from Boston. So, yeah. But yeah, it is that. And it's a very valid, validating it brings peace. It also, and the arts help. Like I said before, I think I said it before we started recording, but every single person that I have seen that has made it out has some artistic outlet, every one of them. And that is because it allows us to have a voice and it allows us to be truthful and raw. Like, my forte is not comedy, but I can definitely bring people to tears on a stage. Because, I can be raw. I can expose it all. I've got nothing to lose. And if I can help other people do that and feel safe about it, like create a community of people that let them feel safe in their rawness, not trauma bonding, not getting off on people's core, because there are people who do that. It's really frustrating. But giving place people a true safe place that's not one-sided is, I think that's healing. So that's why I do what I'm doing.
That's so great. Listen, Carib, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Thank you so much for sharing your stories with me. And I haven't talked to somebody who uses art in the way that you do in a long time. And I'm just really glad that I got to talk to you because, a lot of times my podcast can be a little, facing towards, improv schools and people who went to Juilliard. And it's nice to hear that art in its most pure form is, helped you get through the tough times in your life and is helping you to help other people, to empower them and get to a better state in their own lives. So thank you so much for the work that you're doing. And thank you for chatting with me on the podcast.
Oh yeah, it was absolutely my pleasure. I'm so glad I didn't have to tell a joke.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.